I will call to order this remote meeting of the Conference Committee on the Omnibus Commerce and Energy Finance Bill and ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Chair Long.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Akam.
Akam present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Chair Dames.
Present.
Chair Senjam, Chair Frentz, Senator Frentz, Senator Matthews.
Matthews present.
And Senator Utke.
Present.
We have a quorum. Members, we have two things that we are going to do today. We are going to be doing some testimony on a few energy provisions, and we are going to be looking at some same and similar provisions also in the energy space. Because we're still waiting for a couple of senators, I think that I will shuffle our agenda a bit and start with one of the bills that we're going to look at on a testimony basis. That bill is the Future Fuels bill. This was in the House energy portion of our omnibus. And first, I'll ask all testifiers that are coming before the committee today are coming by invitation of both the House and the Senate. We had some discussions about who we would be inviting today. I'm going to ask all testifiers to keep their comments very brief. We're on a very tight schedule today, to not be duplicative of one another, and to please keep your remarks confined to the bill that is being considered. We obviously have a huge bill to consider overall, so I'd like to keep the testimony focused on the measure that the committee is considering today, the Future Fuels provision. And with that, I understand the first testifier is Brendan Jordan for a one-minute introduction. Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brendan Jordan, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Future Fuels Coalition. The coalition represents broad stakeholder perspectives from the automotive industry, biofuels and agriculture, the electric vehicle sector, environmental and conservation advocates. The coalition strongly supports the Future Fuels Act, as included in the House position in the Omnibus Commerce Bill. Minnesota has long been a home to innovation in policy and business leadership in the clean fuels sector. The Future Fuels Act continues that leadership. By acting now, we can determine our own path as a state rather than having it defined for us by the federal government or by other states. This provision does not tie Minnesota in any way to regulators in another state. It's not a mandate for a specific technology. Rather, it's technology neutral, market-based, and relies on private sector innovation and investment. Mr. Chair, I would turn now to two Future Fuels Coalition partners to talk about the benefits this program could have for the future of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. The next testifier is Gene McCaherty from Guardian Energy. You could state your name for the record and proceed to your testimony.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Gene McCaherty, the CEO for Guardian Energy Management. I oversee the operations of three ethanol plants with a combined annual production capacity of about 370 million gallons, including the Janesville facility in southern Minnesota. In my other roles, I serve as the board chair for the Renewable Fuels Association, a national trade group of ethanol producers. I also serve on the board of a regional ethanol marketing group, RPMG, and that of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. For the last couple of years, I've actively participated in a series of stakeholder discussions focused on the development of policy initiatives that can help solve emerging society challenges by capitalizing on our region's unique and abundant resources. Specifically, we have discussed strategies that can harness the power of our region's rich agricultural, forestry, and energy resources to reduce transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions, cut harmful tailpipe pollution, boost our economic activity, and increase our region's energy self-reliance. Through these discussions, our diverse group of stakeholders has determined that a clean fuels policy, or a CFP for short, offers tremendous potential and promise for addressing the environmental and economic challenges related to producing and consuming transportation fuels. In essence, a well-structured CFP sets carbon reduction targets and creates economic signals that increase the production and use of cleaner, lower carbon, renewable transportation fuels. Under a CFP, transportation fuel providers are discouraged from supplying high carbon fuels to the marketplace and rewarded for continuously reducing the carbon intensity of the fuels they supply. Our group of stakeholders, which includes leaders from the ag and energy communities, as well as environmental groups, developed a set of guiding principles and key considerations for the development of a state or regional CFP. We believe Minnesota programs should play to our state's strengths and avoid the problems associated with other existing state CFP programs. We were pleased to see that our vision of a CFP was included in a set of policy recommendations from the Governor's Council on Biofuels, on which I served. Now that CFP policy proposal is embedded in the Future Fuels Act, a part of this omnibus bill. The Future Fuels Act can be a great win for Minnesota. Here's why I'm asking you to support it. The Future Fuels Act is a fuel, a technology, and a vehicle neutral program. It does not dictate or mandate the use of any certain fuel or any certain vehicle. Rather, it establishes targets for reducing the carbon intensity of fuels consumed in Minnesota. Then it lets the marketplace determine the most efficient and cost-effective strategies for achieving those carbon reductions. A CFP creates market-based incentives for the entire fuel supply chain to continuously lower the carbon intensity of the fuel. In the case of renewable liquid fuels like ethanol, farmers can also share in the benefits of these incentives by adopting climate-smart practices that reduce the carbon intensity of the biomass used to make renewable fuels. With technology that is known today, ethanol could be carbon neutral or negative. This means that with every gallon of liquid fuel burned in Minnesota, we could potentially be removing greenhouse gas from our air. Imagine that. Whether or not you are a supporter of biofuels, this kind of a neutral program will act to reduce the climate impact of our transportation sector. We don't have oil wells in Minnesota, but we have plenty of renewable biomass and production technology to convert that biomass into fuel that can be used right here in Minnesota. Market forces are very efficient. If we set aspirational goals and allow the program to be guided by science and innovation, our private sector will deliver. This program is not a government mandate. It's not a tax, but rather it describes the climate goals that we desire, and it allows the market to innovate and deliver solutions. Because all transportation fuels are assigned a unique carbon intensity score under a CFP, the life cycle analysis methods that we use to derive these scores is really crucially important. The Future Fuels Act will use the most recent version of the greenhouse gases, regulated emissions, and energy use in technologies, or called the GREET model, from the Department of Energy's Argonne National Labs to determine the carbon intensity of transportation fuels. The DOE's GREET model is considered the gold standard for life cycle analysis worldwide. The Future Fuels Act would recognize and support emission benefits from a variety of Minnesota-produced clean fuels. It would include ethanol, biodiesel, fuels from wood, and other emerging opportunities. In Janesville today, we produce cellulosic ethanol, which has less than half of the carbon intensity of starch-based ethanol. These gallons are currently being shipped out of the region because CFP programs in other states have created pull demand for these lowest carbon fuels. Those states win by burning the lowest carbon intense fuels, and Minnesota loses the opportunity to keep this commerce and environmental benefit in our own state. Minnesota is in a prime position to lead this kind of a CFP program. The Midwest leaders from other states are watching Minnesota. We've always been a leader in climate policy, and this is an opportunity to again set the standard. For all of these reasons, I respectfully ask that you support the Future Fuels Act and look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you. And we'll get through all the testifiers on future fuels, and then we will have a brief moment for member questions. We do have a full agenda and limited time today. The next testifier is Terry Kalesa. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. Red Rock Biofuels.
Thank you very much, and thank you for letting me participate today. We basically, I will talk about one of the projects we're working on. The project that we're working on is in Oregon. It is a project that takes waste woody biomass and converts it to jet fuel and diesel fuel through basically a thermochemical process, gasification, Fischer tropes, and upgrading. Janine talks about a lot of the advantages of kind of the clean fuels program. And part of the reason, and the way I'm talking today is basically is that Minnesota is kind of behind the West Coast right now in on the clean fuels programs. And that's where a lot of all the fuels are heading to. And a lot of products are getting done closer to that area because you have to ship your fuels into that area. Our product is in Oregon. It's in Lakeview, Oregon. It's in South Central Oregon. It's a town of 2,500 people. It's really in the middle of nowhere. It's about 90 miles to a town that's about 25,000 people. So the area that we're in is a fairly remote area, but it's a nice area to build a facility. Our first facility essentially right now is about a $400 million facility. The next one that we're looking at would be closer to $900 million as well. We use about 160,000 bone-dry tons of wood waste woody biomass each year for about 15 million gallons of renewable cellulosic fuel. And that jet fuel and diesel fuel that we produce goes to FedEx Southwest on the jet fuel side, and Shell distributes that on the renewable diesel side. And so our program basically is to build as many facilities as we possibly can. And that's where the state of Minnesota comes in, basically, since I'm a gopher at the University of Minnesota, so I have a special place for my heart in Minnesota. We'd like to build facilities there, but it's hard to do that when you don't have a clean fuels program because these facilities are very expensive to build, and they're really hard to place these things because, again, the draw radius of the wood is you need a lot of waste woody biomass to pull it in. Well, Minnesota fixed that bill for us, and we've had folks from Minnesota contact us and ask if we could do facilities there, and we can. Part of the issue is that we just have to decide where the best place to place these things are, and a lot of it has to do with the clean fuels programs that are in each state. And every state talks to me and asks me, why would you bring a project to us? And they say, well, I could really use a clean fuels program so you can compete with some of the other states. And the thing about the clean fuels program that we like is they're kind of state-centric, which means that Minnesota can kind of make it its own, like other states do. Like from Oregon is different from, say, California. Washington is different from Oregon. And they kind of really tie into kind of the local resources that they have. And that's what we like about those state programs, because they really fit the area and not trying to fit the whole nation, which is very different. Out west, the big issue is forest fires. And so basically thinning the forest, that's one of their big programs there. Whereas in Minnesota, it's basically they have pulp and paper that's kind of gone down, and they have extra wood that could go into some of these fuels. And so that's why we like the state-centric programs primarily. Our fuel basically that we produce can be dropped into any fuel, and it meets ASTM standards. It has near zero sulfur and aromatics. And basically, it's about net carbon zero is about where we're at now. And that's been a big push in the last probably 6 months to a year, is getting those carbons to net zero. And all the products that are coming up from waste woody biomass, from garbage, from all these things, they are all pushing to go to a net zero because that's what the customers want. That's what the airlines want, and that's what the renewable diesel customers want, because everybody's trying to reduce that, and it's a real big push. And it's doable today. And so what we try to do is just use, for us, it's about trying to get the forest residues that we can from folks that are already doing it. And so we use the limbs, the branches, the needles. We use the waste off the woody biomass and some thinnings. We don't take the wood for lumber like that. The sawmills take that out. We just grab whatever is the waste products. And we create these renewable diesel fuel drop-ins. and they just a lot cleaner burning. One of the things we like about what we do, kind of like the ethanol plants down in Minnesota, our plants are in rural areas, and so we can provide, you know, high-wage jobs in rural communities, and we can prove the tax base. And for folks like where I grew up in a small town in South Dakota of 2,000 people, that's a big deal. And because we all want to live in those areas, but we want to have good jobs. And so that really is important to us as well. When we're with the ability that we have, we're not in the city. We're out in the rural areas, which we kind of prefer and we like. And basically, that's the kind of programs that we're looking for to produce new plants, to put new plants in. And we know that Minnesota's always been a leader in kind of this area. They basically have created the whole ethanol industry, probably starting when I started the industry 20-some years ago. And so they're always a leader, and they're very foresight. And Minnesota is, I'll give you the credit for this, is has the unique ability to balance economic interests with environmental standards. And they find a really fine line there, and they make it fit, and they make it work. So we would like to see a clean fuels program in Minnesota because we'd love to build facilities there. And we think that that's the time is probably, it's everybody, I've talked to four or five different states who don't have them, and everybody's trying to push into that area. We believe Minnesota can step up and lead again, and we hope that happens. Thank you very much, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you. The next testifier is Joe Smentek from the Minnesota Soybean Growers.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as stated, my name is Joe Smentek, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. The Minnesota Soybean Growers Association is a nonpartisan advocacy group that represents the interests of our state's nearly 28,000 soybean farmers. We're also the oldest state soybean growers association in the country. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to address the committee on the Low Carbon Fuel Standard, also known as the Future Fuels Bill. MSGA has been a longtime supporter of biofuels. In 2021, the state will celebrate the 20th anniversary of a biodiesel mandate pushed by MSGA. For the last 20 years, we have worked to increase that original 2% mandate up to 20%. We have done this through the legislature and by going through at least 12 separate committee hearings with opportunities to work out differences in policies and ideas in the legislative process. MSGA has closely followed the development of low carbon fuel standards in other states. There have been numerous issues we have had with how these states deal with soybean oil and other feedstocks for biodiesel. Many of these are specifically contradictory to how Minnesota has looked at biodiesel and soybean oil in its creation of the biodiesel mandate and federal lawsuits Minnesota defended that mandate in. We were told at the beginning of this process that these differences would be figured out before we saw legislation like this in Minnesota, and these issues were not figured out and are not figured out in this bill. This bill wants us to trust the PCA to solve these issues. The same agency has already looked to the California Air Resources Board to write rules for them on electric cars, and we do not trust the PCA to right-size this rule for Minnesota and work with the diverse stakeholders to address concerns with the bill and the intricacies of Minnesota's 20-year stance on biodiesel. This bill will affect much more than our fuel supply than a 20% biodiesel mandate did, and all of the difficult issues will be left to PCA to deal with behind closed doors with a great degree of agency deference. MSGA does not want to leave this to the PCA. Long story short, this bill is not ready for prime time. Biodiesel mandate legislation is finally moving in neighboring states. MSGA has no interest in creating a new Minnesota fuel policy island. Many of the feedstocks that are used in these types of policies are grown by our members, and therefore people think we should be behind this legislation. But this bill, with a lack of direction from the legislature and without the benefit of full hearings in each body, is simply not right-sized to Minnesota and could end up hurting my members if wrong-minded policies are adopted by the PCA. We should continue to work towards a true Midwest low-carbon fuels standard with neighboring states so that we could truly replicate the scale of California's fuel market with their 39 million people versus Minnesota's roughly 6 million people. We should reconcile the distinct differences in different models and right-size this policy for the Midwest before we move legislation. We should have full hearings in both bodies to work with allies and opponents alike on these issues and not leave this to a state agency to figure out on their own. Thank you for giving us the opportunity, and we would ask that this not be included at this time, but there be more direction to work on these policies in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. We will have a couple minutes here for member questions, but we do have a large agenda to get through and only about 20 more minutes to go here. So I see Senator Prince has his hand up. Senator Prince.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and nice to see you again, Mr. Smentek. I do have a couple questions. We're trying to craft policy that would allow biofuels to compete in the 0 to 20 year timeframe. I'm looking at future fuels and asking, isn't this a way that we can make them competitive and force the kind of innovation that we're going to need to make it a permanent part of our energy mix?
Mr. Smentek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Frentz. Then the answer to that is maybe. We heard from Ms. McCarthy's testimony a lot of ifs. If we do this, if we do that. If the state were a PCA were to simply say we are going to do the credits like they do them in California, then we have a situation where soybean oil is viewed as a food product. That is not the stance of the state of Minnesota. In federal legislation in court, that was recognized that our soybean oil is a waste product. It was a drag on our soybean crush markets. Therefore, we are unfairly penalized in California because they consider it a food product. We do not crush soybeans in the state of Minnesota to create oil for food. We create the food for livestock. That was a drag on the market. And if we lose that distinction in this type of legislation, those credits won't be worth as much as something like the Oregon biomass or some other type of thing. We have no guarantee that our fuels are going to reach those kind of credits that others get. And that is the part of the problem we have with this legislation. We'd love to work that out. We'd love to have those discussions and figure those things out and get that into the actual legislation language through the legislative process and not hope that the PCA does something that will make our products as valuable as they should be.
Senator Frentz, if you have a brief follow-up.
The briefest I can make it. Thank you, Mr. Smentek. I look forward to working with you. I look forward to the discussions about how we're going to advance it and forward to the discussion about the distinction about waste product. But just so we're clear, the bill in the House version has Commerce running the program, not PCA. Am I right?
Mr. Smentek.
A lot of the rules and how the process will actually work, I believe, is left, from my reading, is left to the PCA to right-size those models. Even if it's Commerce, my group still is going to have a concern with that. I mean, I think there is a reason the Governor's Biofuels Coalition is housed under the Department of Agriculture. I believe the biofuels policy should run under the Department of Agriculture in the state and should continue that. Their absence in this bill and in this scheme is also another issue that my members have with this piece of legislation as it's written now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smentek, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Frentz. We will now move to, since I see no members seeking recognition, I'm going to move to a series of motions on some same and similar provisions that we reviewed a couple days ago and I believe are ready for action. Senator Matthews, I believe you have a motion related to the local worker impacts on facility retirement. I believe this is on page R80. Senator Matthews?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One moment. I'm juggling a couple of screens here, making sure I'm properly muted on my other one. So I am going to bring a motion on the worker provisions that we had discussed that's going to eliminate number 5 on both side-by-sides. So if Ms. Fontaine can make sure I say this right, I'm moving to adopt R80 to R81 House side, line 189.1 through 189.13, and then 189.16 through 189.22. And that will leave out paragraph 5 and adopt the rest of the language. And I'm hoping I stated that correctly, Ms. Fontaine. I'm getting a nod.
And it conforms with what I have on my sheet, too, Senator Matthews. I don't know. Did you want to speak at all to this motion? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's a pretty broad agreement to the overall concept, except for the one provision. There's some, we're not quite there yet. And so members, stakeholders that I talked to ask that we leave this out of the bill, continue to work on that issue in the future. Since there's no imminent plant closures, we have time to figure out how we want that to look like. There's some concern about crossover jurisdiction, perhaps between different unions or different groups. Of course, our intent of the bill was not to create those problems to begin with. So we'd like to incorporate the rest of the language, get that structure set up, and then can work on what provision number five might look like later down the road, if anything. So, but to the rest of the provisions that I did move, there seems to be pretty broad agreement to all of that. So with that, I urge members' support.
Thank you, Senator Mathers, and thank you for your leadership on this really important issue. I think it's a really valuable legislation that you've been working on and an important issue. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am a little disappointed again today. We did not get information on my side of the equation until very late in the process. I have not had a chance to review the materials to my satisfaction, and so Mr. Chair, I don't know that the public has also had a chance to review the information. So, Mr. Chair, I request a roll call on the motion today. Thank you.
Representative Driscoll requests a roll call. There will be a roll call. I see no further members seeking recognition, and so I'd ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson?
Aye.
Chair Long?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Acom?
Aye.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Chair Gaines?
Aye.
Chair Senjum? Senator Frenz?
Aye on Senjum.
Thank you. Senator Frenz?
Aye.
Senator Matthews?
Aye.
Senator Akki?
Aye.
And we are 4-1 on the House side and 5-0 on the Senate side. And so the motion prevails and the provision is, the two provisions are adopted. Now I understand, Representative Long, you have a motion. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very simple motion to eliminate the solar report. And I would move that we adopt a provision on R43 to R44 House side lines 180.25 to 181.31.
Any discussion to the Long motion? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Once again, I want to renew my concerns that we have not had a chance on my end to receive this information. We actually received it after the committee was supposed to start, understanding that some workers in the Hills were working on some things. And I request a roll call. And these may be very good provisions, but to be on the safe side, I'm going to be voting no to make sure that I'm not supporting something I don't know exactly what I'm looking at today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I will just note for the record that all of these provisions were in both bills. They were reviewed by at our hearing multiple days ago. They were heard in both chambers, so there has been an ample opportunity for everyone to know about these provisions. Any further discussion to the motion? Seeing none, Mr. Brown will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Chair Long.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Acom.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Chair Daines.
Aye.
Chair Senjum.
As protesters have come.
Senator Frenz.
Aye.
Senator Matthews.
Matthews, aye.
Senator Akki.
Aye.
And Chair Senjum.
You're muted, Senator.
Chair, if I may. Yes.
I didn't say aye to myself. Okay, aye.
With four ayes and one nay in the House and five ayes and no nays in the Senate, the motion prevails. The provisions are adopted. Senator Senjum, I believe you have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I have a motion to adopt, and this has to do, Mr. Chair and members, of the so-called administrative master solar contract that is administrated by the Department of Administration. So I would move adoption of provision starting on R171, the House side, lines 274.19 to 274.26.
Any discussion to this engine motion? Representative O'Driscoll.
I'll dispense with my previous comments, but I will request a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll requests a roll call. There will be a roll call. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Brown will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Stevenson, aye. Chair Long.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Acom.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Chair Daines.
Aye.
Chair St. John.
Aye.
Senator Frantz.
Aye.
Senator Matthews.
Aye. I just want to say thank you for
Senator Uckey.
Aye.
And we have four ayes in the House against one nay, five ayes in the Senate, no nays. The motion prevails. The provision is adopted. And I believe we have one further motion from Senator Senjum, this time coming from the finance side-by-side document.
Mr. Chair and members, I would like to move then, and this has to do with the Clean Energy Training Center pilot project in North Minneapolis. I would like to move a provision that starts on, that exists on page R11. It's the House side, lines 303.20 to lines 304.27.
All right. Senator Senjum makes a motion. Any discussion to the motion? Representative O'Driscoll.
I may be predictable, but I'm going to ask for a roll call again, Mr. Chair.
We'll get your roll call.
Just restating and referring to my comments on the record from earlier today. I'm hoping that next week when we start anew, that things might be able to get out to members a little bit in a timely fashion to all members. Thank you.
And again, I will just note for the record that all these provisions have been for the committee for almost the whole week. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Brown will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Stevenson votes aye. Chair Long.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Nope.
Representative Acom.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Chair Daines.
Aye.
Chair Senjum.
Aye.
Senator Frantz.
Aye.
Senator Matthews.
Aye.
Senator Uckey.
Aye.
And with four ayes in the House against one nay and five ayes in the Senate, the motion prevails. The provision is adopted. Members, unfortunately, you know, the way we work here at the end of session can be very unpredictable. The Senate had a very good, productive, and interesting debate that delayed the start of our committee. I understand there are other committees meeting now and other commitments that senators have, and so we will have to leave it at there for today. I had given my word to the Senate that we would be concluded by 2:30, and I will keep my word. Senator Daines, I don't know if you want to comment on anything going forward. I think I will say the next time the House has the gavel is on Saturday. We don't intend to call a meeting then. I don't know if you wanted to comment about Friday.
And we will not be meeting on Friday, but we will be meeting on Monday at the current time.
And apologies to the testifiers who came into the Zoom. We will talk about whether we can accommodate testimony at a future hearing date, but I do want to keep my word to Senator Daines and the rest of our friends in the Senate. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.